It is Sunday, and you know what that means. It's time for the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. That's Joe Wally. We're back, baby. We're back. Week off. First Sunday I had off, I think, since 2019, show. So we're well-rested. We're back. You're feeling better. You're rocking and rolling. We're talking Jays. We're talking football. Wrestling. Lots of good stuff today. How you doing?
Good, Andy. Yeah, you said it was your first day, your first Sunday off since, basically since we met, essentially.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Since we have known each other, it was the first Sunday you had off. Yeah, I was feeling a little under the weather. Thankfully, it was not COVID, which is always always good, right? And here we are. We're back. So, yeah, I guess it's unfortunate we missed last week because last week was WrestleMania, and we were going to do some fun stuff for WrestleMania. But you know what? That's okay. We can always talk about it a little bit after the fact. Jays are back, too.
Oh, yeah.
We have some baseball guests today, some NFL news and notes. Like, it's actually, because we missed last week, it feels like it's a little busier than it usually is.
That's right. NFL draft coming
right
so quick. April 27th, folks. It's April 10 today. So we're going to talk NFL draft wide receiver prospects. Who should we be looking for? What could it mean to possible landing spots and what it could mean for the veterans where they would go fantasy-wise? So we'll talk about that. Steve Buchanan, MLB and NFL analyst from DraftKings, is going to join us. Talk a little fantasy baseball. One of the elements, show, of course, is there's the season-long that we talk about so often, but also the daily function for fantasy baseball, which I think is maybe the most interesting when it comes to daily fantasy and daily betting, even, is baseball. Because, like NFL, you got one game a week for each team. You're focusing up. You can really hone in. Baseball, like, you can have a bad, like, if you're in a four-game series, you can have a bad week. You like still a good series and not get a hit in a game. And it depends. In daily, did you pick that game where that star didn't get the hits? Right? Like, it's so, you can have so, lack so much success, but still have a great series. So that's what makes it the most tough for me, is playing daily fantasy baseball because of those, because there's so much of it.
Would you say daily fantasy baseball is harder than daily fantasy hockey?
I would. And again, Joe, I say it because it's like, think about it. You can be in the Hall of Fame hitters. You get out 7 times out of 10 and you're in the Hall of Fame. That's the only sport that happens.
Right.
In hockey, if you don't get a point for 7 games, people are like, okay, what's happening? Baseball, you're up, you get 7 tries at it, or 10 tries, and you get out 7. It's like, wow, that guy's awesome. I think it's hard because of those predictability factors. Like, the pitching side, maybe a little less so, because you get that, you can really hone in on who they're playing in the lineup that day. But I think for the batters, it's just really tough, because you can have those stretches, right? Like, show, even like, you can have a bad week in baseball because there's so many games, still have a great season. It's that's why I think it's the hardest one.
You also reminded me that last night the Leafs won. They beat the Canadians, which you wouldn't think is like a super noteworthy accomplishment, but considering the last couple of times the Leafs played the Habs, they lost. I think it's actually good. You know what? Good for them that they were able to actually win last night, and that Austin Matthews scored 2 goals. My question to you is: how much playoff fantasy hockey? How many playoff fantasy hockey pools do you think you're going to join this year? I gotta say, I love the playoff pools. Like, you know those ones where, because the playoffs are not going to, like, I mean, basketball playoffs start, I guess today is actually the last day of the NBA regular season. The play-in tournament, which kind of sits in that weird in-between spot, starts tomorrow. Right. And then next Saturday, the 16th, the actual NBA playoffs start. The Raptors will be in the playoffs, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the NHL. I think there's still like a couple of weeks left in the NHL regular season for all teams. I think it's something like in the last, maybe like right around the NFL drafts, I think, is when the NHL regular season ends.
But
you know those
left.
Pools? Right, exactly, yeah. And you know those pools that a lot of people are in? Like those ones where it's like you pick a bunch of players from teams that are in the playoffs. Yeah. And then like your goal really is to pick as many players as possible from teams you think will go as far as humanly possible. And then you just get like the cumulative points. I love doing that. We should do something like that for the listeners once the NHL season gets going, I think.
Yeah, for the playoffs? Sure.
Yeah,
let's
yeah.
do that. Absolutely. That adds something to it for sure. Let's do that. We should look into his well show starting at the Sportsnet Fantasy Listener League. We've gotten some for baseball. We've gotten some questions on that, so we'll have to look into that and maybe get it going for next week, because we had a lot of fun playing that last year with all the listeners. So we'll keep you up to date on that, folks. We'll track that down and see what we can do. Get some maybe some listeners some pizza prizes. Also, speaking of pizza prizes, our AEW Fantasy Wrestling League, Listener League, courtesy of our buddies at Drop the Belt, is a boy show. We'll talk about it a bit later. But technical director Josh Santos is, in wrestling terms, he's burying us. He's going on a run. He's like Goldberg undefeated streak. He is just mopping the floor. So we'll see if he continued that this week. It's a run. It's pretty impressive. But the listeners do have a chance to win some pizza with that. We'll tell you about that.
Andy, can I just say real quick that I'm not in last place, which, you know what? I think that's a win. That's a real win. Not in last. I think that I can, anything above that is truly I have succeeded in life, honestly.
Thank you. Studio audience, you're welcome.
I'd like to thank nobody but myself. I'd like to thank just me.
Just you for your efforts. Absolutely. And I post the standings out on Twitter at The Fantasy Show, at AndyMC81 and SNSLE.
It's
but yeah, you're not in last year. Who's in last? Our buddy Nick Alberga, disappointing. Fuzzy Muzzy's last. Oh, what an embarrassment. I told him too. I said, I'm going to call you out until you're out of last each week. Until he does a run-in on us right there. But what we're going to do, because Josh is so, he's so dominating right now. I'm going to call it the Santos Rule Show. We're going to give away the pizza prize based on who scores the most total points that week. So week over week. Because otherwise, it looks like Santos, the House of Bebe, his fantasy team, is going to win all the damn Domino's pizza.
I'll put it this way. If the listeners want any chance of winning pizza, like, I'll put it this way. Santos has 434 points. You and the second place team have 316 points. So, he would have to basically, like, drop his players in the way it works in order for literally anyone else to even have a chance of winning. Like, he has almost 200 more points than me. I'm in sixth place. So, I think that's probably, like, I think if we want anyone to actually participate from the listener side, yes, I think you'll have to institute some kind of secondary rule here.
A week over week for points. So we'll see. We'll see how, we did week 3 to week 4 for the listeners who are called Team Outsiders. And, folks, if you want to be the listener team GM for Team Outsiders, if you want to be the listener GM for this week, all you got to do is text 590-590. I posted it on Twitter as well, at AndyMC81 and at The Fantasy Show. You can reply there. Just text in your name. Say, I want to be the wrestling GM for the week for our AEW Wrestling League. And, you make some roster moves, mix and match a little bit. Maybe you can win some pizza for you and the listeners. So we'll get into that a little bit later on in the show. But before we get into some NFL, let's talk some Jays, man. How about that? 2-0, undefeated. Let's go.
162-0, still on the table, right? Still possible.
Still alive.
I gotta say I don't know how much of the game number one you watched on Friday, the season / home opener. And I was working that game at the station, and boy, like, the timeline, Andy, was grim. It was grim. Like, they went down 7-0 in the first, like, four innings. Like, nothing went right. Jose Berríos pitched, I think he went a third of an inning, and I think he said after the game he was, like, really jacked up. He was throwing his fastball, like, a good couple of miles an hour faster, so he was throwing it harder. I think, like, a lot of them wanted to... Like a lot of them hadn't been a part of the home opener in Toronto before, and they really wanted to, impress people. And let's be real. Like, I mean, Berríos was not good on Friday,
right?
And as a result, they were down 7-0 early. People were saying this is the worst home opener ever. It's like 2013's home opener. It's like going to be right up there when it's all said and done. And then they made the massive comeback, Andy. Right? Mm. Like, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. chipping away at things with a couple RBI. Teoscar Hernandez, the massive moonshot, and like the vibe, like it must have been. I wasn't down there. I was physically at the station running the broadcast, the radio broadcast. But I gotta say, the like the vibe of people physically at the Rogers Center It must have been like being on a roller coaster, right? Like you're so jacked up pregame, your energy's buzzing. They have all these cool pregame ceremonies. They give the Silver Slugger trophies to these guys, and Marcus Semien gets the Gold Glove, and Vladdy gets the Hank Aaron Award. Meets Hank Aaron's widow, and all these really cool and touching and misty-eyed things. The giant Canadian flag, and then they like an air being let out of a balloon. They go down 7-0, and then they come back and tie it. Then they go down by a run again, you know, they're tied again, and then in the end, Danny Jansen with a home run, and I don't know. I was exhausted by the end of it. I wasn't even physically there.
What a great start to the year. Yeah, you're right. Just everyone's all jacked up, and then it's down like, oh, this team. Oh, and then you see people, this team's not even going to make the playoffs. Wait a minute, they're coming back. I love them again. Like, all right, good. You're fine form, Blue Jays fans. Fine form already. Mid-season overreacting form. You know, the fans, too, Shohei, have to get the overreacting. You got to get your reps in there, too, right? You got to get your in-game in-game overreact. And I guess baseball is always the toughest one to, like, until late in the season, to really get too worked up over a particular game. Because it's like, all right, even if you don't like what happened over the first two games, it's like, well, I hope over the next 160 we can figure it out. You got some time, is what I'm saying, Joe. Right? You got a little bit of time.
I will say, at the very least, I feel like past versions of this team, and I don't even mean like last year, because last year we all know the fight they showed and almost making the playoffs, and they won 91 games and all sorts of things. But you just look at the fight they showed, and I feel like it would have been really easy after going down 7-0 for even the players themselves to have said something like, "Ah, well, 0-1, I guess we'll get back at it on Saturday," right? And I mean, they did, yeah. and they won anyways. But I feel like it would have been really easy for them to say that on Friday. And you know what? They didn't. Like, kudos to them, they didn't, right? Because they had, like, when Teoscar Hernandez slid under that tag at home plate and his toe touched it, and then they did the review. And by the way, I do like the I gotta say, I love the NFL, NHL, NBA style review of like announcing things to the crowd, like and having it get on the mic instead of them just like, you know, signaling safe or out or whatever, like without saying anything. I gotta say, when Teoscar slid under the tag, he went crazy. He was like screaming in the dugout, and then the crowd treated it like it was a playoff game. Like the crowd treated it like it was like game three of like the World Series or something like that. It was awesome. Remarkable. I got to say, like, it was really, really cool. And so it's funny because you often hear that if the home opener is your best crowd of the year, your worst crowd is the very next game. And you know what? Saturday's game yesterday was awesome. Like, everyone, if you're listening and you were at that game, man, you guys were great. Like, it was quite the scene. So I hope that continues.
Finish.
Yeah, I hope it continues, man.
Yeah, another exciting game, right? Took it out 4-3, and Espinel doubled in the go-ahead run in the sixth, and it was like, all right, you had another second exciting game. And I will say this, the comment before of like, oh, there's 160 more. True, but we also have to remember, show that quite often at the end of the year, and the Blue Jays were a perfect example of this last season, where, all right, the game's in April, okay. But at the end of the year, when you miss the playoffs by literally, what was it, the two tiebreakers, the Yankees and Red Sox screwed you, and you would have won one or two more games out of 162, that is tough to swallow, because then all of a sudden you're looking back at those games in April, like, oh, man, that one. Oh, if you could have got. So in the end, like, if you're a incredible runaway team, it doesn't matter. If you're a terrible team and not making the playoffs, it doesn't matter. But the odd time, like with the Jays last year, it really does matter. So you don't know which games it's going to be. You don't know how the situation is. But every one of those games, in both of these first two situations, for the Jays starting 2-0 first time since 2016, that might be something where we look back and like, boy, it was that close. And thankfully, this time they won those games they were supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Blue Jays are going newsflash, they are going to lose some games at some point this season.
You.
Between now and October, they will lose more than one game. Oh. I'm unfortunately here to say, but okay. I gotta say, they the way they've been playing, I don't know if it's, I mean, again, two games, very small sample size, also spring training having been shortened, maybe we'll see the starters go less deep into games versus, you know, maybe we might see the bullpens being used a little more frequently, right? Cause I know there was some hand-wringing after Berríos went just the one third, but I mean, you look around the rest of baseball, right? Just like not even the Jays. Like on opening day, the Gerrit Cole only, I think, managed to go 4 innings. Corbin Burnes struggled. Yesterday, Brandon Woodruff struggled. Mm-hmm. Lucas Giolito, I mean, he wasn't struggling, but he got abdominal tightness and left his start early. So it's like, you know, at this point in the season, it's April 10th today. Season started on, I guess, what was it, the 7th? Jays started on the 8th. I think we should give it like a month, you know, like give these pitchers, I don't know, like 3 to 4 starts. Absolutely. before you can start saying, oh no, like Corbin Burnes sucks again. He's bad. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's just, we gotta pump the brakes on that a little bit. I think most people understand that too because of the shortened spring training. And I mean, hey, Kevin Gausman, he looked good yesterday, right? Like his sure splitter looked pretty nasty. Like it looked nasty. Like it was pretty great. I think I'm looking forward to seeing that play for the Blue Jays all season. And I look forward to seeing what Ryu and Manoah and Kikuchi have over these next 3 days. But boy, like I think the struggles with pitching for starters is not only certainly going to be limited to the Blue Jays.
Oh, no, you're right. It's at least a month, and really, even for hitters, it's going to be a little sporadic. I will have to say, though, show my first overall pick. I had first time, I think, God, maybe ever, I've had first overall pick in my fantasy baseball draft.
Right.
And, like, you know, we always go over a scenario, but usually, you know, just by pure chance, you pick in the middle, you pick wherever. But rare to be first overall, and I had that pick, and I'm looking, I'm like, oh, man, oh, no. Oh, no, now who do I pick? Usually it's like, oh, fourth guy. Oh, I would have taken that guy. And so it was drafted. I'm like, show, I'm going to take Vladdy Guerrero Jr. I'm like, ah, but what about Trey Turner? What about? I'm like, damn it. I'm going to take Vladdy. I'm going to take him, and I'm going to run with it, and I'm going to make it fun. And I took Vladdy Guerrero Jr. with the first overall pick. 4 total hits in the first 2 games. Let's go.
Who were the rest of the top 5 after you took Vladdy number 1?
Turner was 2. I know that. I don't know. I'd have to try to look at the draft order in my Yahoo League.
I put you in a bad spot. I should have known you weren't going to remember.
Actually, look at me. I did find it. Hey, good for you, Andy. Okay. It was Vladdy Guerrero Jr., Trey Turner, Jose Ramirez, number 3.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's interesting. Juan Soto, 4. Bo Bichette, 5. 2 Jays in the top 5. Let's go. That's awesome. I like, too, how they still have Shohei Ohtani, in brackets, batter.
That's pretty funny.
Then Mookie Betts, Corbin Burnes. Burnes was the 8th overall pick. Wow. Freddie Freeman, Gerrit Cole, Kyle Tucker, and Walker Buehler were the top 12 in my sort of long-term big money pool. By big money, I mean it's like $50. That's big money for me, Joe.
Yeah, that for you, that's big money, yes.
Ooh, that's sweating. Yes. That's sweat. But I took Vladdy, and it was great. And so after that, then it's tricky because it's like, okay, I have the first overall pick, but in a snake draft, now I have to wait a long time to pick again, right? Then I get the back-to-back picks all the time. So, you know, at the end of the second round, I picked Ozzie Albies, tough start to the year for him, and then Xander Bogaerts for Boston. So I kind of hit that middle infield in rounds 2 and 3 and then kind of went from there. But, yeah, it was George Springer, by the way, went in the 3rd round. That's a pretty good pick. So yeah, it's interesting. I just thought, you know what, if it's close in my mind, why not have a little bit of fun and take Vladdy Guerrero Jr.? And you know, you're going to be cheering and watching him every day anyway, so why not?
Yeah, I've 1,000% subscribed to that rule, right? I think, like, whenever I draft, as someone who grew up watching the Leafs and the Raptors and the Blue Jays, in any of those sports fantasy drafts, I always go out of my way to take, I mean, I won't overdraft a guy by like 3 or 4 rounds just because, but I mean, like, if I have the chance to have a player from one of those teams on my squad and it makes sense for like where my draft position is, yeah, you bet I'm going to take one of those guys, right? Like, if I can get, like, in a fantasy hockey league, it may not end up being like Austin Matthews or something, but even if I can get someone who is like kind of a point producer or a goaltender that I think might have some value, like a la Jack Campbell, maybe at the beginning of the season or something like that, yeah, I'm going to do that, right? Or for the Raptors, like, for years, I would try and draft Lowry or DeMar DeRozan before him. And then, you know, after, I mean, certainly this year, no Lowry, and after DeMar in 2019 was traded, you know, you're pretty much drafting like bench guys, but Pascal's a popular one, Fred VanVleet, another one. But yeah, I'm fully on board for that. Don't you try and do that even in fantasy football? Like, wouldn't you try and draft like some, like if it can make sense, wouldn't you feel like a little better about drafting like a Brown, for example?
I do. The trouble is, so often it doesn't make sense, which is. So often it doesn't make sense, but yes, if the stars align and something works out, yes, that does make it a lot more fun. And I try to openly avoid getting any Pittsburgh Steelers or Baltimore Ravens. There comes a point though where I won't sacrifice the well-being of my fantasy team to not take one, right? Like I mentioned, mm-hmm. in Juju's whatever it was, rookie year, I think it was, where he balled out the second half of the season. I got him off of waivers, and he helped win me a championship. So, you know what? Like, I think the main thing is, for me, I would have rather lose every fantasy game for my real-life team to win, right? But,
sure.
So, when a rival on your team, of your favorite team, plays your team, I hope they have the worst fantasy day possible, because I don't want the team to do well, or the team still wins, they ball out, and it's like, okay, well, you know, my real life team actually still won. This player had a good game, but not good enough to win the game. So it's that delicate balance for me. But I would much rather have my real life team win than my fantasy team.
That's fair. It's always it's the worst weeks when like all of your real life teams lose, and then your fantasy team also all loses, oh, right? Like in a specific matchup. It's a little worse in fantasy football, just because they all play in like only on a couple of days, right? Whereas like in fantasy baseball, basketball, and hockey, they all basically play all the time, right? Like they're all like your team is like your matchup, depending on your league. Maybe your matchup is a week long, but I mean in other leagues I've been in, the matchup is like a couple of days or something like that, right? So you're always setting your lineup essentially all season, whereas in football it's just like you're really just setting your lineup for like maybe Thursday, but mostly Sunday and Monday, right? So it is always worse when your team loses and your fantasy teams also lose.
Oh, then you're just miserable, Sean. Then it just sticks with you for a week. Like, stupid game, hate it. You know, you're just
that's
mad.
That's why I've become more of a gambler. Like I've started betting more money, and then the real doozy is when you lose all your bets too, and the first two things still happen. So it really spirals.
It snowballs. That'll be when we have our intervention for you, show. We can pull this clip and like, that's why I got into gambling. I swear, I just had to chase this one more bet.
I remember once, Andy. I think it was in the playoffs, and or maybe it was like right before the playoffs. No, it was the playoffs, because it was like the first year they did the Nickelodeon game. Remember they started doing that a couple years ago for in the NFL?
With slime and stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll say this. I love that thing. I think it's fantastic for growing the game in an unconventional way,
yeah.
Obviously,
oh, yeah.
Right? But I remember, I think it was Saints-Bears. And I was in some playoff pool with some of my friends, and you know, we all put in like 20 to 50 bucks, and we pick we all submit a bracket, kinda like March Madness, right? And whoever has the most correct bracket at the end like wins the whole pool. It's like winner take all. And I think I had picked the Saints to win, and they did win, thankfully, but like it looked like they were about to lose. And so at the very end of the game, I think I bet on like Mitch Trubisky to lead like a game winning drive, and he did lead a game ending drive, but the game was so far out of reach that like it didn't end up mattering. But it's something like I bet on the Saints to win by like I bet on them to win by like 7.5 points, and he threw a touchdown at the end of the game, like Trubisky, into the end zone, like literally to Jimmy Graham as time expired, to make it, I think, a 7-point game. And if they and if they had kicked the extra point, I would have lost. Because they were so far out of reach, the refs just waved the extra point off, and I won.
Oh.
And I gotta say, I think like that was the closest I've ever come to just like crying, because I had like bet enough money earlier that day that I lost all the bets, and I was like, oh, thank God. Also, I'm never betting on this sport ever again. So there you go.
And then you did.
The lesson learned was that I broke that promise within 24 hours. So there you go.
Instantly. It's like, wow, I can't stop with this. That's free money. How can I not bet on that?
I know.
Right? You just keep going. It's totally. As long as it's done in a nice, responsible way that doesn't ruin your life, it's all good. It's all good.
Well, you know.
Hasn't ruined it yet, Joe. Hasn't ruined
no,
it.
No, not yet.
Let's talk a little NFL news and notes. I found this really funny show. And it's not like breaking or anything like that, but I thought it was, you know, there was a post. It's like Carolina Panthers Sam Darnold not concerned with team's pursuit of other quarterbacks. And his quote was, "I have enough security in myself where I can say, I know I'm a good quarterback. I know I can be a good quarterback in this league. I've proved it." And I just sort of laughed out loud at that show. I'm like, "You sure about that, Sam? Can you give us some examples, please? Can you provide some examples of where you proved that you're a good NFL quarterback? Please, please, can you provide games, some context to that?
Games of 1 through 4 of the 2021 NFL season.
Right. What happened after that, Sam? I can't remember. But before that, so remember the mono, Sammy? Yeah. It's like he's allowing it to be, say, I'm fine with that. It's like, you don't have a choice, dude. It's not like you have an option. You are a bust. And that's really what it is. And that's where I think this NFL draft is going to be so interesting, because there's still teams that either need a quarterback immediately or need one pretty quick as a developmental guy to try to bring up, right? Like Seattle for sure. Drew Lock, come on. Stop it. He's not going to be the guy. Carolina Panthers. Yeah, like Cam Newton's done. Sam Darnold, no. You could have him as a transition guy. You know, Steelers as well. You know, you have Mitch Trubisky. RIP Dwayne Haskins. What a tragic story that is.
Oh, my gosh, goodness. I know.
Oh,
my goodness.
Out of nowhere. Just awful. But, like, you have all these situations and stories where it's like, all right, you need a quarterback, and in this draft, you don't have that big-time star expectation out of necessarily any of these guys, Joe. That's where the issue really lies, right? You can make an argument for or against any of these guys, which you can't for any rookie prospect, granted, but it's not a Trevor Lawrence. There's not an Andrew Luck. There's not, pick Joe Burrow. Pick your guy, right? It's so up in the open. So I wonder, do we see teams wait? Or much more likely, is the thirst just too much and we just see people lunging and reaching for these quarterbacks that should probably be going late in the first round or into the second round, and great prospects falling?
Yeah, I think what we should see is maybe two quarterbacks get drafted in the first round, probably, right? Like probably Malik Willis and probably Kenny Pickett, right? For a team that's like for like at the end of the first round, like or maybe a better way of saying it is in the second half of the first round is where I would feel comfortable drafting Kenny Pickett, because he is the most pro ready, as everyone has been saying. That's not a hot take, but which would mean that if you're drafting in the bottom half of the first round, you're probably a playoff team anyways, right? So if you're a playoff team that needs a new quarterback, like, I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers really stand out to me, right? Like, the Steelers are a team that if they think they can continue to compete, I know they have Mitch Trubisky, but, I mean, they were a playoff team last year. So if they can get in a cheaper rookie quarterback and see what they can do with him, and I mean, Mike Tomlin's a pretty good coach, and we'll see what he does with the kind of pieces around him, then that like makes the most sense to me. However, like I just kind of feel, like you said, because this is such a quarterback driven league, that most of these guys are probably going to go in the first like 15 picks like they did last year. Even though most of them, you know, like, should we really be seeing, I don't know, Sam Howell or Matt Corral or Corral drafted in the first round or look very high in the first round? Probably not, but they probably will be. Like Carolina and Washington and Seattle are probably all going to draft quarterbacks this year. Like probably, right? And I mean, sure, could they trade for Baker Mayfield or something and maybe temporarily solve that problem? Yeah, I guess. But Baker is also owed, like, I'm not sure exactly how much, but it's a lot of money.
$18.89 million.
Yeah. So, you know, do you really want to tie yourself to essentially $19 million for a guy who is at best a stopgap at this point? Like, probably. Like, versus drafting a rookie who may not be the entire answer but is very cheap for 4 years? Probably. It sounds more appealing to me, doesn't it?
One guy we're gonna have to draft or track, show, is your favorite. I think what would become your favorite, maybe the show's favorite quarterback at some point, depending on landing. So Bailey Zapp.
Oh yeah,
from Western Kentucky.
Oh baby,
fifth round grade, 6 feet, 215 pounds, babe. But the hands show the hands compared to baby hands Pickett. Oh, he's a monster. Bailey Zapp, 9 3/4 inch hands. Baby hands Pickett, 8.5. Come on.
I'm telling you, man, we gotta measure our hands. Just because we keep going on about this. I need to know what my hands length is.
Well, we'll have to get. Here? I'll have to find a tape measure, I guess. I think you do it tip of the pinky finger to tip of the thumb. I believe that's how they measure it.
I'm going to look for one in the break.
Yeah. But, like, yeah, Kenny Pickett. The interesting thing is when you look at most draft grades, and again, draft grades and where teams in a year where everything's equal, which it never is, compared to where quarterbacks will be taken. And we know there's always going to be quarterback taken in the first round, always. Except I think for 1 year. Was that the Geno Smith year? That was a terrible year. Oh, my gosh.
That was a pretty bad year.
Maybe E.J. Manuel was taken in the first round. I don't know. But
I think he was. You know what? I think the Bills did draft E.J. Manuel in the first round. I'm pretty sure.
What a bad quarterback year. Oh, man. But, like, these guys, if we look at our buddy from Dame Brugler, I got the Beast. Oh, my gosh. That it just came out, like, 2 days ago. His draft guide, like, 400 pros. We'll try to get Dane on in the next couple of weeks. Guys, just puts an amazing piece out for The Athletic. But the grades... There is not one. Kenny Pickett and Malik Willis show are the only ones that have a combined first and second round grade, which means if they're in between, really, in a perfect world, they should be in that kind of 29 overall to like early second round grade. That doesn't accept. There's no first overall guy here. Even Desmond Ridder, who I absolutely love at a Cincinnati, has a second round grade. And you mentioned Sam Howell, second and third. And that's where it goes. Everybody was like, oh, next year, all the time, the next year's quarterback class is the best one, without doubt. You talk to anybody, oh, next year. I'm like, yeah, but you said that about this year, and it sucks. Sam Howell is supposed to be one of the guys. And, you know, to me looking and seeing and watching and going over what he is, Sam Howell looks like one of the most ordinary players I've seen. 6 foot nothing, to just very, very pedestrian. And that's kind of what I get the feel show for a lot of these guys. Either they're just kind of, all right, you know, average, or they have, like, extreme upside, but so many questions. I think maybe the best one could be Desmond Ridder, depending on Landis, but I love that guy. Just don't go to Pittsburgh. Oh, show, he's going to go to Pittsburgh, I know
he
it.
He is. No, he is for sure going to Pittsburgh. Absolutely he's going to Pittsburgh. Here's what's going to happen. Like, I just said Kenny Pickett will be a great fit in Pittsburgh. The truth is Pittsburgh is just too low in the draft for them to
trade up,
really stick around for any of the top guys. So what's going to happen is they're going to have to quote unquote settle for Desmond Ridder, and then he's going to ball out for years. It's going to be what's the general manager, Kevin Colbert, I think his name is, or Colbert. He's going to retire, I believe, after the conclusion of the draft. And so his parting gift, his retirement gift to the Steelers, will be drafting their next franchise quarterback for them.
Oh, please no. Go through hell like me for a while, you squealer fans.
They did. Their hell was essentially Big Ben's last year, and now they're going to get the redo it all over again.
No, don't you put that evil on me, show. Don't you do it. All right.
Hey, Andy, also, real quick, before we take our break. So you were right in that E.J. Manuel, he was drafted in the middle of the first round in 2013. Geno Smith was the next quarterback drafted at the beginning of the second round. He was the only quarterback drafted in the second round. The next quarterback in 2013 was drafted in the third round. Can you guess who it is?
Third round? No. Who?
Mr. Mike Glennon. Good old Mike.
Oh.
Good old Mike Glennon.
Oh, Mr. Giraffe with that windup. You could see like a windmill 10 miles away. What year was that?
2013.
That's got to be on record for one of the worst quarterback classes of all time.
I feel like it. Any I mean, look, the next quarterbacks were Matt Barkley from the Eagles, Ryan Nassib from the Giants out of Syracuse, Landry Jones, the Steelers drafted him out of Oklahoma in the fourth round. And then, you know what, now we're really getting into the weeds here. I don't even see another quarterback for the next several rounds. So you're probably right, honestly. Like, it probably is one of the worst QB draft. I mean, because the NFL has always been QB crazy, right? Like, I think, was it 2012 Sam Bradford was drafted, or maybe I have to go back a little further. Maybe it was 2010 or 2009, maybe. But yeah, it's just that was a pretty bad draft class. There's no doubt about it.
It was awful. Hopefully, this one, no matter what turns out to be, a better draft class
than that. Right?
We got, we know quarterbacks are going to be taken in the first round, multiple ones anyway. Let's take the break. Lots of fantasy baseball talk coming up. Top of the next hour, Steve Buchanan from DraftKings is going to help us out on our daily and season-long fantasy baseball. Up next, though, let's get ready for the NFL draft. Which fantasy football wide receivers should we be keeping an eye on? We'll dive into that next when the fantasy show continues. Andy and Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We are back. We are rolling on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. That's Show Ali. Give us a follow on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at the Fantasy Show. You want to be our guest listener GM for our Fantasy Wrestling League? Hey, just shoot us a text, 590-590. Or on Twitter, you can reply to the tweet I put out at AndyMC81. You want to be our weekly, new fantasy wrestling GM. Make your pick, see if you can win a pizza prize, and try to dethrone our juggernaut champion, Josh Santos. We'll bring him on in the last segment of the show.
We don't have to, though. We don't have to bring him on. It's okay.
The champ is here. So we have to, you know, we got to give respect and then just, because if you do that, then you can pounce on him when we finally beat him. Then you can really stick it to him, right?
I enjoy that you were like, the champ is here. then we can stick it to him.
And we'll get him. We'll get to that a little bit later on, though. Lots of fantasy baseball talk coming up top of the next hour. Jays in action, of course, later today. Hinjin Ryu on the hill, right, Joe?
That's right, yeah, Ryu. And then I believe it is Manoa tomorrow, first away series of the year starting tomorrow, Monday. And then Kikuchi will round things out, and then we'll start all back over again with Barrios. So, but yeah, Hyunjin Ryu, I'm curious to see what Ryu has left in the tank. I got to say, like, I think I'm not saying he's like washed up by any means, but, you know, last year was his age 34 season. So, you know, he struggled a little bit. Maybe was part of it was the sticky tack stuff, the spider tack, break crackdown, and then he was injured as well towards the end of the season. But you know what? At the end of the year, when he came back after the injury, I thought he was relatively effective, right? So I'm looking forward to seeing what we get out of Ryu today. Don't forget, 1:37 p.m. Eastern first pitch on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Such an odd start time to some of these ball games, eh? Why? why?
I don't really know. It's a good question. Yeah. Why? They used to all start at 1 Eastern on Sundays. Why 1:37? So strange.
Right. Very strange. But I have to say, Show, real quick before we get into our wide receiver draft, I forgot to tell you this. It was like early in the week, I had a dream for some reason that, and this is, I hope it's just, you know, it does not come true, obviously, but that Alek Manoah got like just destroyed. Just like, and I'm in my dream. In my dream, it was me holding my signed Alek Manoah rookie card. And I was just like, I was just so mad. I was like, damn it, Manoah. Why? And I was just so, I'm like, this is worth nothing now. Done. I was just like upset with the rookie card. And he just like got just destroyed. So I'm hoping that is just, you know, it's just nerves. Get it out of the way. Because I got that and my Nate Pearson card. Come on. Come on, boys. Make Uncle Andy some money. Let's go.
Well, Nate Pearson apparently has mono, so who knows what his schedule is like, Andy. Like, I don't think we're gonna see him pitch for like at least until May at this point. If not longer, honestly.
That dude's getting snake bit, man. Like there's always something. Oh, got the same.
I mean, you know
the mono.
Like you know the raw stuff with Pearson is so good, right?
Yes.
Like you know it is so electric, right? 100-mile-an-hour fastball. I mean, how could you not be tantalized by whatever that can be, whether it's a starting pitcher role or a high, you know, first guy out of the pen role or whatever you want to call it, right? I just, you know, I kind of starting to agree. I'm still kind of holding my breath that he'll be good, but at the same time, man, it's just the mono thing, and now he has to get built back up and conditioning and all that stuff. That's really tough.
It is, and I'll post a picture next week, Show. So you can see the glory that is the Nate Pearson signed rookie card. Oh, man. Has the jersey patch. It's like part of like the sock part. It's such a beautiful card. It just hurts. Come on.
I'll give you $5 for it. I'll give you $5.
You will not get that. I will be buried with that card before I sell it for $5. It's a gorgeous card. Anyway. All right, let's get to some NFL draft wide receiver prospects. And, Joe, we spoke about how weak the overall quarterback class was. Just question marks. People are going to reach for them. And, you know, what are we going to expect? The strength of this draft is on the defensive line, specifically at pass rush and wide receiver. Oh, baby. This is what, Joe, like the third straight year where it's just been an embarrassment of riches when it comes to wide receivers, right? Like, there's been so many good ones. And I just want to tell you how many first-round grades we have, like true first-round grades on wide receivers. One, two, three, four, five, six. At least six. And you could probably make an argument, if I'm looking, I can make an argument for at least one or two more. So you have anywhere from six to eight first-round grade wide receivers of true difference makers. And there's such a blend. You got your little speedy guys. You got your in-between guys, outside, inside, big body. Like, there's just, if you need a wide receiver, this is a great year to go get one. And for your fantasy team, whew, depending, as always, Joe, depending on landing spot,
we could see
some new stars.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I think most people, and again, I don't think this is a hot take at all. I think people will absolutely be okay fantasy-wise, maybe unless you're like a Vikings, Bears, or Lions fan, with Aaron Rodgers grabbing the next, I don't know if it'll be Devontae Adams, but like the next fantasy-relevant wide receiver. And I mean, honestly, you look at they have, I believe after the trade with the Raiders, they have the 22nd overall draft pick, which is the Raiders pick. And then their own pick, which is the 28th overall pick. So, I mean, sure, one of the top receivers could fall to them at 22. If even you know if what we expect to happen happens, which is essentially that quarterbacks go heavy in the first 15 picks, let's say, and offensive linemen always do as well. Not to mention all the defensive players, linebackers, defensive ends, safety probably as well with Kyle Hamilton. So. And you look at all those guys, there's a real chance that the Packers won't even have to trade up to get someone like Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave or Jameson Williams if they feel he's healthy enough to play like at some point this season, right? So I just, like, there's a real chance we can see, like, whoever the Packers draft, and you gotta assume it's a wide receiver. Although I gotta say, if it ends up being like a running back or like a quarterback or something, I will probably die from laughing, honestly. But. I really hope it's a wide receiver. Let's put it that way.
And whatever the stat is, Joe, and you hope for the Green Bay's purposes. And I don't care if the Packers win or lose. Doesn't matter to me. But just like to not waste the immense talent of Aaron Rodgers, that you break from your mold of not drafting a wide receiver in the first round for a million years. And they have a history of finding gems in the later rounds. That's fine. But at some point, Joe, don't get cute. Don't get cute about it. Don't be, oh, we'll get a value guy. I don't want a value guy if I'm a Packers fan. I want the best guy. I want a star. I want him right now. I don't want to be waiting and say, like, hey, you know what? Maybe in the fifth round, I'll get Velus Jones Jr., who I personally think is going to be really good as a slot guy. But don't get cute with it. Get your star. Now, if we're looking at Jameson Williams, who you mentioned out of Alabama, that is the biggest wild card where that guy goes. Torn ACL. Not expected to be back or to be getting back until like at least October. So now you're talking rookie. Now you're talking getting back, working his way in, easing in. Fantasy-wise, now if you're in a dynasty keeper league, yeah, you go get Jameson Williams for his upside long-term. Season-long, Jameson Williams, don't even bother, personally. He's going to be a bencher on your IL for the whole year. And we know with rookies, by the time you get back, okay, then what? Then it's October, and then, okay, then November, maybe he starts. What are you going to get, 2 weeks out of him? So that's going to be the real wild card where he ends up. Because if a team's like, yep, we are totally sold, we don't care, we're going to take him. This dude has the talent to be the first wide receiver off the board before that injury. Or our team's like, I need something now. It's a now league. Do you wait, and in 2 years' time, are we talking about Jameson Williams, like, wow, Joe, can you believe that guy went 28th overall or something like that, and he's a superstar?
Yeah, that's kind of why I think he won't go that late. Like, I still think some team will say, you know what, the chances of this guy being good are so high that they might as well take him now, right? Which is why, honestly, I could see him going to Green Bay at 22, honestly, because even if he's not going to be a part of their plans until October, you know, what Aaron Rodgers just signed a 4-year deal, right? So if that's the case, I mean, you expect him to, he may not play all every single year of that deal, but I mean, if they go out there and they draft the best guy to compliment him for the next several years, I feel like that might keep him happy. You know what, then on the flip side, to play devil's advocate, maybe they want someone who will be with Aaron Rodgers from day one, right? Like actually mm-hmm. on the field catching passes from him on day one. So, you know, that's why it could very well be Garrett Wilson or Drake London or Treylon Burks or and your guy, was it Christian Watson? Was the guy? Although I don't know if he's going to be picked that highly, but still, right? I mean, there's so many options. I mean, heck, the Packers could pick two wide receivers if they wanted to in the first round, right? There are so many teams that you could make the argument for drafting a wide receiver. Like certainly the Packers, the Chiefs, certainly now as well, now that good old Tyreek Hill is out in Miami. You could probably make the argument that the Houston Texans would have a pretty interesting landing spot for a wide receiver if you believe Davis Mills is competent at all. And maybe even the Jets, right? I mean, the Jets are a team with a relatively speaking high draft capital. And I know they have Elijah Moore, but I mean, you know, you need another guy, right? You can't just only have Moore, right? So if you want Zach Wilson to succeed, you better surround him with as many weapons as possible, right?
It's really interesting, just the amount of talent, but with the different that come in the different sizes. Show that can truly be like it really depends what you need, right? Do you need a huge outside guy who maybe a little raw? I think the drop issues should be corralled by now, but you never know. But who's a freak athlete like Drake London, almost 6'4", 219. Guy's just a monster. Like, you're not beating him in any jump ball scenario. Like, if the ball's up in the air, it's his, and he's taking it, and then he's running through you. Or do you say, okay, well, what about a Garrett Wilson? What about a Chris Olave? The two Ohio State receivers, like, the 40-yard dash time, 4.31 by Olave, or 4.39 and 4.38 for both Wilson and Olave, just burners. But they're on that sort of tweener size, 5'11", 6 feet. You could put them outside, probably better in the slot, but you can move them around. Then what about, I think this guy show, and he's compared himself to Deebo Samuel, and I agree. Treylon Burks, that guy, 6'2", 225. You can line him in the backfield. He's done gadget plays. He's been used as a running back, wide receiver, outside, inside. Huge as far as like catch radius, and just, I think, as complete of a big-bodied back that you can put anywhere. Treylon Burks, watch out for that guy. If he dips, that's somebody the Packers could target for sure, and who could really just be used as a, like look how Deebo Samuel was used last year's show, right? Like, he could rush, he could run, he could catch. That's the wild card pick. Who gets Treylon Burks? And wherever he goes, I hope it's in a creative offense. Like, don't put him in a stagnant, you know, just like, you're this, and that's all. Like, in was it Fangio before in Denver, who you're just like, wow, all right, go back to 1950s football, and you know how these guys are exactly going to be used. Get somebody creative with a Treylon Burks.
Yeah, I am looking forward to seeing. What do you think of the Eagles as a landing spot for Burks?
I think the Eagles would be a phenomenal spot where you work in Jalen Hurts. Oh, my gosh. Like, imagine the type of creativity you could get for a guy like Hurts who can run. Now, you did get Devonta Smith. So the question is, do for the third straight year, the Eagles use a first-round pick on a wide receiver? Does it spook them, or are they looking for more weapons? Now, you have to wipe out Jalen Reagor, who, you know, that's a sticking point with me. What a stupid, stupid pick Jalen Reagor was. I could find you three. That draft class, I could have found you three Jalen Reagors in the third round. No, the guy's a total bust. Not his fault he was taken in the first round. Hope he gets all his money. True. No fault of his. Terrible, terrible pick. But then you get Devonta Smith. So now let's say if you add a Treylon Burks, or what if you go with like one of the smaller, zippier guys, like a Calvin Austin III? The guy's like 5'7", but runs, I think it was like 4.3. Like, just stupid fast. Or like a Sky Moore, like a much smaller, zippier guy who you could put inside. Then you could work on, if you don't want to go big body, somebody you could do those end arounds, those quick little outs, almost sort of like a Jalen Waddle thing, like a comfort bit for Hurts where you can get the ball out of his hand quick. I think that's important as he continues to develop. So it really depends. What type of guy do you want? And you mentioned it. The Christian Watson, that's my combine crush this year's show. the Christian Watson. 6'4", 208, oh, 4.36 second. This guy has future DK Metcalf written all over it for me. I love him. I love
you
him.
You wish. You wish it's DK Metcalf.
Oh. Like, Christian Watson is all, and Treylon Burks is right there, too. But Christian Watson, you had a little bit more size, and he's not going to be necessarily the gadgetry type guy that Burks could be. But, oh, man. Like, just the burst by Watson. He has that pull-away speed that almost looks effortless. Sort of like, remember when Josh Gordon wasn't suspended, like for those, you know, that brief hiccup in time, and he was actually right. like on the right. field in his prime show where it looks like, wow, he's not even trying. And then you look, it's like, how did he get so far away? And it's just because they're so big and you just have that natural pull away burst. Oh, Christian Watson, you get him on the right side. That's a guy I think you put him with Aaron Rodgers, for example, or any like real competent quarterback show. That's a guy in your fantasy draft I want to be looking at as early as possible. I think that guy's a future star.
Here's a team I'm going to throw out to you for Christian Watson that I think fantasy-wise would be great. The Chicago Bears. I think Justin Fields is super talented. I've always been very high on him, like a lot of people have been. But I mean, he struggled last year. I don't think he was set up very well for success. But they still have Darnell Mooney there. And if Darnell Mooney is your one guy and Watson is your number two, or maybe vice versa, depending on what their roles are like, I think they can complement each other very well. Based on everything you've told me and based on what I've read about Christian Watson, I think their games would complement each other really well. And it would just mean it would make life a lot easier for the Chicago offense, who already have a very good run game, right? Like they have, I don't think anyone's going to worry about David Montgomery this year, right? So I think, if you have Montgomery in the backfield, Fields, who is a mobile guy as well, a decent offensive line, Darnell Mooney, and Cole Kmet, tight end, I think you add in someone like Christian Watson, that's a pretty complete offense, I would say.
It is, and I think what we also have to remember is it's a new coaching staff
that's
in Chicago.
What I mean, yeah. Yeah.
You know, like with Matt Nagy, that's gone. Now, Matt Eberflus, are him and his staff going to be the answer to unlock that? I don't know. And that's what makes me a little bit nervous from going with somebody like a Bears for a Christian Watson or anybody with the offense, just because we're not sure first time head coach again, right? But I see what you're saying. The surrounding pieces, absolutely, right? So it could be very, very interesting. Another guy I just want to point out before we break, David Bell, I think matches up very well as a young Jarvis Landry type. Smaller, around 6 feet, but he is powerful. He like an angry runner show. You hear runs angry. Like it's just like aggressive. Great hands in the gauntlet drill at the combine. Just everything. Natural hands, position, like just one of those guys who can catch it in stride and go in the slot. Not a burner, like not someone like a Jalen Waddle necessarily who'll catch it and then he's a blink of an eye gone. But he won't be afraid to put his shoulder down and run through you, go over the middle. So David Bell is somebody who needs not as a star, but maybe in a PPR situation, if he can go into a team maybe as the second or like a key slot guy, almost let's say like a Hunter Renfro situation, different types of player, but situation where he ended up with the Raiders and just got all the balls, right? He got all of them. That's a guy, again, to keep an eye on, David Bell, and of course my guy, Christian Watson. I hope he falls to the Browns in the second round. I'll be ecstatic.
Maybe next week we can do running backs because we've done quarterbacks and we've done wide receivers. Maybe next week we can do running backs. Talk about the Damian Pierces and the Isaiah Spillers of the world and where their top fantasy landing spots. Real quick before we break, I did find a ruler in the break. And so what did you say? It was from the tip of your thumb to the tip of your pinky to measure your hands.
On your throwing hand, So tip of the pinky to tip of the thumb, you spread your hand as wide as you can, and you measure it, like that. You know what? We can see who you match up with as far as quarterbacks. Are you going to measure it in the break, or are you going to do it now?
No, I measured it in the break already. I wrote it down.
Oh, let's see. Okay, I'm going to hold the quarterback hand.
This is a ruler in centimeters, so it's 24 centimeters. And Google tells me 24 centimeters is 9.4 inches, which...
Bigger than Kenny Pickett!
It seems wrong. Like, you know what I mean? Like
that means, show you are in theory a better quarterback prospect than Kenny Pickett. Better quarterback prospect.
Sign me up for a 4-year, $25 million contract, Andy.
Your other prospects, quarterback prospect, show has bigger hands than our. Let's see. So it's just Kenny Pickett, then sixth to seventh round grade EJ Perry, who I don't think we'll hear too much of ever again.
Probably.
Same hand size as Caleb Elby out of Western Michigan. He is expected to be a end of the seventh round.
Okay.
And then you get into undrafted, many undrafted prospects, so similar to Show, who will not be drafted. Skylar Thompson out of Kansas State, Akil Glass as well. And that's
cool,
it. So bigger hands than Kenny Pickett is Show. I have to find a real, I want to see, maybe I'm better than the Pickster as well.
Now I'm curious. Then I need to know what size you are too.
I got to find, you think with having two kids at home, I have a ruler hanging around. I'll try to look for one. But
okay.
In the meantime, while we look for a ruler, we will get ready for some fantasy baseball talk. Season-long, daily. Steve Buchanan, our guy from DraftKings, is going to join us when the fantasy show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Hour two of the fantasy show kicking off right now across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. That's Show Ali. Give us a follow on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. You want to win some pizza? You want to win a pizza prize, folks? You're going to have a chance if you are the lucky listener, guest, general manager for our Fantasy Wrestling League. We'll talk about that, our buddies at DropTheBelt.com, in the final segment. So if you want to be a wrestling GM, got your fantasy roster, we'll hit you up. You can text us 590-590 or on Twitter. Let us know if you want to be it. And if you have the most points gained in the week, you will win a Domino's Pizza Prize. So let us know if you want to be a part of that. Let's talk some fantasy baseball. Season is going. It's early. Drafts are done. But what early season moves should you be making? And from the daily fantasy perspective as well, we bring in our guy from DraftKings, Steve Buchanan. Steve, how's it going, buddy?
Good. I got to get on that wrestling thing. That sounds amazing. I got to get in
on it. It's awesome. Are you a wrestling guy?
Oh, yeah, man. Absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. We will chat. Okay. Yes. We will chat. You know what? Maybe we'll make Steve our guest GM this week. We'll see.
Ooh, okay. Let's go.
Right? I don't, you know, could be. Drop the Belt. Our guy's there. It's a really cool wrestling fantasy site. So we'll let you know more about that. But Steve, let's get into it. Look, the baseball season, it's begun. The drafts are done. We're rolling. Just from you looking from, all right, what you were expecting pre-draft, how a lot of drafts shook out, who were maybe some either guys that you felt, just in general, were taken maybe out of value, or just ones, players that you thought, hey, you know what, somebody's going to overlook this player or for this reason, and I really like this guy. Who are one or two of those type of players that you expect big things from this year that maybe in the fantasy world could have been had out of value or overlooked?
Yeah, you know, you think about all of these top prospects that got called up right before the season began. I think it was three of the top five guys made the opening day roster. That was Bobby Witt Jr., Spencer Torkelson, and Julio Rodriguez. These are all guys that, you know, these guys were barely even staying in the minor leagues. I mean, obviously, we didn't have the minors in 2020. But these are all guys that haven't exactly gotten off the great starts in the first two games. Extremely small sample size. But these guys, these kids have been called up early for a reason. So you were able to grab some of these guys in the late, late rounds. And believe me, if they're still somehow on like the waiver wire or whatever, like, you need to grab these kids because they're going to make a difference, especially because these teams feel that they're ready already. Like, Julio Rodriguez is a legit 30 home run, 30 steal, 100 RBI type guy. Spencer Torkelson can also be one of those guys. Bobby Witt's got some power. Like, all of these kids are something to keep an eye on. And this is such a great time in baseball because all of these guys are up at the same time and they can be massive difference makers for the Royals, Tigers, and Mariners this season.
Yeah, you mentioned Rodriguez. I think I had seen he was part of them setting up the Mariners comeback and eventual win. I think it was yesterday. So, I mean, like, you're right in that. It's may not be super fantasy relevant right now, but I agree with you, Steve, that we might get there sooner rather than later. You know, one thing Andy and I were talking about in the first hour of the show was the shortened spring training and whether or not it's hurt some of the top pitchers, right? I mean, here in Toronto, Jose Berríos did not have a very good outing on the season opener back on Friday. You look at other guys who played that day. I mean, Corbin Burnes had a pretty, you know, pretty awful start. Garrett Cole only went four innings. Even Robbie Ray, he walked more guys than he had basically all year. Although he did go particularly deep. I'm curious, do you think the shortened spring training is something fantasy-wise you have to kind of be a little wary of when you're starting some of your stud pitchers?
No, no doubt. I think it's something you really do have to take into consideration. And because like someone like Sonny Gray just went for the Twins yesterday. He pitched 4 innings officially during spring training. Like, that's absolutely asinine to think about when your, you know, second day starter has 4 official innings logged. Now, don't get me wrong. These guys are doing side sessions or they're throwing on the side or whatever. So it's not like they're just 4 innings. Like, okay, go and see what you can do. There's obviously these side sessions here, but yes, that is absolutely something you're going to see. You're going to see guys pulled early. I think it was Shane Bieber on opening day, lasted 4 2/3 innings, and he wasn't even pitching that bad. They just pulled him early because he just didn't have the innings under him. So it is something to consider, but it's also like there's nothing you can do about it. You know what I mean? It's not like there's other guys who are going to like, oh, we're way more stretched out than you are. Everybody had about the same amount of time to get ready. So it's just something we have to deal with. You almost kind of have to treat this as an extended spring training, even though these games actually do mean something. But give it a couple weeks, these guys will be stretched out properly. But, yeah, especially during the first 2 weeks here, you're going to see a lot of that. It's going to be very, very frustrating, but that's just how it worked out. I mean, it could be worse. There could be no baseball at all. So I'll take these shortened outings for the first couple weeks and kind of weather the storm that way.
Absolutely. In conversation with Steve Buchanan, MLB analyst for DraftKings on Twitter at SBuchanan24. And Steve, let me ask you about that then. Just let's think of season long for a moment here. And this might be a more interesting situation due to what we were just talking about with the extended spring training type of situation where how long do you wait on players that you drafted? And, you know, like superstar studs you'll give a longer leash to, obviously. But when you draft, how long till you look at a player and think like, all right, you know what, it's been a month or it's been 2 months. I got to cut bait compared to where you want to give them that long enough leash. But do you have a general practice of how long before you cut bait? Because that's always the tough part in fantasy, right? You never want to feel you made the bad fantasy draft, you made the bad pick, but you can't let pride get in the way either.
No, no doubt. And I think a month is a really good timeline because, you know, even when spring training is at its fullest and you get the full spring training, like you're talking about raw April weather for half of these players that are playing, and if they're not playing out west or whatever, like it's a lot to get used to. And it's easy for us who are sitting on our phones going, oh, this guy stinks. I'm going to cut him already. When in reality, it's like you drafted these guys for a reason, most likely, unless they're like a last round throwaway, you know, because maybe this guy has some type of potential or whatnot. I mean, I personally think that as we head into this season, the MLB is so flush with talent, like more than ever, and a lot because of these kids that are coming up. But there's just so many guys that are just can throw, you know, 98, 99, or guys that can steal bases or hit 30 home runs. There's a lot to choose from. But I really think if you felt passionate about somebody in your draft, to give them about a month or so, because that's when really things start clicking. Once the calendar hits May, if someone is still slumping or someone is still having some issues, then okay, maybe I'm ready to cut bait. But I give it at least a month. I know it can get frustrating in the first couple of weeks or so. But, you know, especially this season, I think guys need a prolonged more time to get acclimated to playing every day.
So, Steve, are there any guys you've seen in the first couple of days as we get into the Sunday of opening weekend here for the 2022 season that you maybe guys in new digs that have looked particularly good? Again, small sample size, but I mean, Carlos Rodon, for example, out west looks fantastic. It makes the White Sox decision not even to give him the qualifying offer look kind of dumb. I'm curious if there are any other similar situations that you think look pretty good early on.
No, you know what? That was going to be the guy I was going to be talking about. Rodon not staying with the White Sox and the White Sox not even offering that was absolutely insane to me. If you look at his numbers from last year, if he was healthy, he easily could have been somebody that would have won the Cy Young. Now, Robbie Ray ended up winning the Cy Young, and you know we all know that story there, but his stuff is so electric. And add on the fact that he's a lefty. That's somebody that is going to be in the Cy Young conversation in San Francisco. If you look at his numbers from last year, he missed a number of starts, but he made 24 starts. He pitched 132 innings. He had a 12.5 K9. He doesn't give up any home runs. He doesn't walk any guys. And he makes so many bats miss. His swing and miss rate was around 14% last year. So now you put him in a tough division in the NL West, and he goes out and has that type of start yesterday. he's going to be doing some big things for that San Francisco team. And he's in such a comfy and cozy division because there's so many big ballparks on that side of the National League. That's just going to do wonders for him, for a guy who doesn't give up the long ball to begin with. So I think that was one of the more underrated moves of this offseason. People aren't going to realize it until a couple months from now, and they're going to go, wow, that was a move that the White Sox could have made, because already Lucas Giolito is looking like he's going to be missing extended time. That's a big hit to that rotation. That rotation's good, but if they had Rodon, you wouldn't have felt it as much. So that's going to be, I think, one of the bigger moves this offseason, and I can't wait to see what he does over in the NL West.
In conversation with Steve Buchanan, MLB analyst for DraftKings and on Twitter at SBuchanan24. So, Steve, let's get to the DFS side, the daily fantasy where you can play contests on DraftKings, because I think maybe more so, at least for me, for baseball than any other fantasy sport, the difference between the strategy for daily versus season long is drastic. Because football, it's almost kind of the same thing because they play once a week. Hockey, not, I don't feel as much. But for baseball, you're playing big picture, right? Like we said, okay, you're given a month. You got, you know, a guy, yeah, you can go the have almost a bad month and still have a great fantasy year. Whereas in DFS, when you're playing DraftKings, you got to try to strike for the matchup. And it brings me back to that weather comment you made when it comes to playing DraftKings during this first month of the year. Is there any strategy you employ where, depending, you know, if it's a weather day or if you're generally in a cold spot, that you try to, if something's close between a guy playing in a good weather situation to a kind of a colder environment, that you employ when playing DraftKings in the first month of the baseball season?
Yeah, one thing to always consider too, just going back to the weather, is the wind too as well. Like if it's blowing in or blowing out. So first you have the raw, gross weather of April, right? Then you could potentially have the wind coming in your face as well. Like, that's just horrible. Like, nobody wants to be in those type of conditions. I don't care how many millions you're giving me. I'm going to be miserable out there, right? But if the wind's blowing in or if it's blowing out, that's very important, especially in these type of months. I mean, the wind is always important at any time, but more so in these early months too. And then also can be a bump to some of these pitchers if the wind is coming in. Like, I see a guy like Freddy Peralta is at the Chicago Cubs today. A prolific strikeout pitcher. We don't expect the Cubs to do well on over the term of the entire season. I know they've had a couple of good wins so far, but let's be honest, that Cubs team is not really going to be going anywhere. Please don't record this just in case. But, you know, I look at someone like Freddy Peralta, who is a prolific strikeout pitcher, and this is a matchup I would be targeted against because he's in Chicago. It's not going to be warm. It's going to be kind of a crap day. So you have someone like him who can throw a ton of strikes, has a K-9 throughout the season in the double digits in all four of his career, and just has unbelievable movement on his fastball. So that is such a type of things to consider. And from the daily aspect, it is every single day, whereas, you know, you don't worry about that too much for season long, but for daily fantasy, you really need to hone in on stuff like that because it's a one-day, one-time-only lineup that you're constructing. So it is very big in these early months.
Oh, yeah, and that's the tricky part too, because, again, for season long, you know, you just kind of ride out those peaks and valleys, but especially on the hitting side, like pitchers, you can kind of scout out a little bit more to your point, just what you were laying out there. But for hitters, that's where I think on the daily side, it gets so tricky because you can have a great, a great player go 0-for for the first two games of a series and then go 4-for-4 the next day. And it's like, okay, well, how do I predict that? How can I predict and sort of ride that? That's always the trickier part for me when it comes to the daily side of it, because you're like, okay, I'm going with star power, but what does this type of situation really present itself? Like a Vladdy Guerrero Jr. is one of those safe players that you can pretty much slide in any day and feel good. But on the daily strategy side, of course, Steve, is if I'm picking Vladdy Guerrero because he's going to be good every day, everybody else is. How do you balance in that contrarian factor where you want the stars, but you also want to make sure you're trying to find those little matchups where people might not pick, and that's how you get those bigger wins in DraftKings?
Yeah, that is really crucial because, you know, it, just like in any sport, it's important to have to eat the chalk, as they say, and, you know, the plays that are going to be super popular, but also trying to find some of these value plays and something that you can kind of jump on. Like, for example, for today, one player that has just been, you know, unbelievable for the Mets so far is Robinson Cano. He gets suspended for a year, comes back like nothing happens, and collects like four hits already, right? Now he's going up against someone like Eric Fetty, who is somebody who historically throughout his career has struggled against lefties. So now you have somebody like Robinson Cano, who is hitting in the heart of the Mets lineup right now, is a lefty, and is going up against someone who has struggled in that matchup. Robinson Cano today is 2,400, right? So I'm looking at that, at something like that as, okay, Cano has already, 3-for-8 on the year, has a couple of hits, has knocked in a couple runs, and this is a matchup, a plus matchup for him because Fetty, throughout his career, has struggled against lefties. So now I'm getting someone like Robinson Cano, 2,400. He doesn't need to do much to return value. That is going to allow me to jam in some of these high-priced guys, like if you want to take someone like Vladdy, and still be able to use him and then offset the burden of rostering Vladdy in terms of salary and grab someone like Robinson Cano at 2,400 because I'm just playing the matchup here. So that's, you got to look at some of those really low-priced guys. That's what's going to be crucial to getting some of them in. And just someone like Cano, he's not going to hit all season long, okay? I think he's like 47 at this point. I don't know offhand. I'm just guessing. But at this point, Cano at 2,400 is such a great value because of how low his salary is, and it hasn't caught up to the production that he's produced even in these first two games. So you've got to try to capitalize on those type of matchups.
Absolutely. Steve, great stuff, man. Great insight. Thank you so much. Where can people find you, ask your questions, whatever, hear all your great content?
Yep, I'm always on Twitter at SUCannon24, so you can always get me on there. And then on the DraftKings YouTube page, we have a ton of content that we put out there daily. So make sure to subscribe on that, and you'll get all your content right there as well.
Awesome, buddy. Let's do it again soon. And you know what? I'll hit you up after. I'll tell you about that wrestling league. Maybe we'll get you as a guest GM.
Yes, please do. I'd be all for that. Absolutely.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you later. There he is, Steve Buchanan, MLB analyst for DraftKings. As he said, you can get him on Twitter at SBuchanan24. Cisho, you never know who's a wrestling fan out there, right?
You know what's funny? I had Carlin Gay, your pal Carlin,
oh, my buddy,
on a couple of weeks ago with Savannah. Savannah and I were hosting on one of the evening shows. And I think, you know what, I think it was right after Razor Ramon passed away. It was like the day he passed away, I think, or the night he had passed away. And we were hosting, and we came on, Santos was our op, actually, and we came back with the music, like his music from his intro music. And Carlin was like, "Show, you're making me a little sad." And I thought, oh, I forgot Carlin was a big wrestling
fan. That's right.
So it's true. You never really know. Like a lot of closet wrestling fans, secret wrestling fans out there. It's true.
That's right. We're giving you a safe space here, folks. We're giving you a safe space to come out and be
probably
able to
the
enjoy
only
your
show
lessons
on the Sportsnet Radio Network in which you can find such a safe space.
That's
dare
right.
I say.
And you know what? I will say this. A lot of people, wrestling, blah, blah, and it's been like that forever, since the carnival days of the 1800s. But you get some of the best interaction from listeners, fans, social media when you bring up wrestling. You do. Just that's what happens. So it's very interesting.
No joke, Andy, I remember when you and I did, it was like in the first, like, I want to say the first couple of months of the pandemic, right? And you and I were doing, we stopped doing the fantasy show because there were no sports.
Right.
So you and I did a couple of random weekday during early evening shows. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of just like a lot of people were in those days. We were just filling time with random content. And we did a wrestling show once. I swear I have never seen the text line and the phone line be that busy. Honestly.
Right? I'm telling you, man, you can go new, old. It's great. That's why we put in. We've been getting great response too on the wrestling fantasy side. So
true.
We'll get into that in the final segment of the show. But we'll talk a little more Blue Jays here. And so one guy, and I think this could be somebody who I don't know about season long, but at least if you track and you know they're going to play for daily, like on a DraftKings contest, Santiago Espinal for the Jays. That's somebody for on DFS sides, especially if you know he's going to be in. Guy, all he does is he keeps impressing when he gets the opportunity.
Yeah, look, again, I said this at the beginning of the show. Two games is a pretty small sample size, right?
Yes.
But at the same time, you often hear these stories about how guys, whenever you come back from the offseason, it's always like, player X is in the best shape of his life. He's going to be he's going to be contributing all these. And you're like, okay, all right, pump the brakes a little bit.
Down.
Let's see it. So apparently Santiago Espinal, I don't know if you heard about this. Apparently he put on 15 pounds of muscle this offseason. Okay,
jeez.
15 pounds. And I thought to myself, all right, that's probably an exaggeration, right? And so he comes into the first game on Friday, and he had, I think he had three, he made hard contact on three balls. One was a line out, one was a double, and then there was another line out. But the first two hits, including the double, they were both hit at like 106 miles an hour off the bat, like the exit velocity, which is just ridiculous. Like that is positively Vladdy and Bo-esque, essentially, right? Like, I mean, Vladdy's hitting like 115 miles an hour off the bat sometimes. But I mean, like still, like considering Santiago Espinal was like a utility guy last year, I was like, holy smokes, right? So yesterday, he does the same thing. He like pulls another one. He hits the game-winning RBI. You know, he's contributing in all these great ways. I got to say, like, if he keeps this up, maybe that whole 15 pounds of muscle thing is not a bunch of hooey after all. Like, it certainly seems that way.
Man. Yeah, and really, show it all depends on the body type, how you carry it, right? And what type of player you are. Because you could add, some guys, you add 15 pounds of muscle, and that takes away from if you're a speed guy, right? That can be a negative, depending on how you play. And also your body frame. Like some guys, you just have a thinner frame and adding that much just doesn't work. But if you can add it in the right way and you get that extra velocity on, then man, right? Like that's awesome. You get a guy who's on a great team already in the Blue Jays, extra motivated. Like, okay, yeah, I'll take that. That works for me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Get another weapon to an already stacked lineup in there. Okay, what do you make of the second base situation? Because for Kevin Biggio, it's like let's all settle down, people. He's had what, like, three at bats or something. Like, I don't think personally Biggio is going to be the long term answer for the Blue Jays, but we got to give him more than two games, right, Joe?
Yeah, I think so. I do think so.
More than two.
Maybe three. No,
three.
I don't know. Like,
yeah, this weekend.
It does kind of feel like people are ready to give up on Biggio after two hot starts from Espinal, and I'm not quite there yet. Is it possible that by the end of the season, Santiago Espinal is the everyday second baseman and or plays like 75% of games at second base, and Biggio is the guy who's the utility guy? Maybe. It's not impossible, but it's just after two games, let's just wait and see the kind of plays that Biggio makes, right? I mean, I've said this a million times, he was so snake bit last year with injury. Like,
oh, yeah.
Good Lord. He had, like, every injury you could get, like, injured shoulder, cervical spine, ligament strain, injured this, injured that. Like, and then I think he tried to play through it, which probably compounded things, right? Made it a little worse. So I think, you know, let's see where Biggio is at. At the end of May, let's see, right? And then, but I gotta say, I bet by then it's still probably a pretty strict platoon, right? Unless there's some kind of trade made to shore up that position with, I mean, it probably won't be Jose Ramirez now, but I mean, if it's someone else, maybe that changes the equation a little bit. But I still think that we might see a pretty strict platoon from at second base with Biggio and Espinal, maybe even someone else.
And that's really where it comes into question certainly for season-long show. I think it's depends on your league and how deep of a bench you have. If we're talking between the two, would I rather keep Espinal right now as a bit of a stash and plug him in when necessary over Biggio? Of course. But it's also a situation where how long do you want to commit a roster spot to somebody who's not necessarily going to be an everyday guy? Now, again, on the DraftKings side, like we just talked about, if you know Espinal's playing, you like the matchup, put him in. No commitment, put him in, right? That's fine. But season long, it's like, yeah, if it comes down to somebody, like if you have that end of the draft player that you took and you're just like, that was the end and I'm not, you know, it's not some sleeper that you love or it's just a guy and Espinal's floating around, then yeah, if you're not going to use a player anyway and you think another player that you have that is available has upside, then I'm all for that. In my year-long fantasy leagues, I usually make at least one transaction every day. Like Espinal right now, I'm looking in Yahoo Show, 1% rostered, 99% availability. So he's there. Like that's somebody, if you do not love a player at the bottom of your lineup and you're bullish on him, then why not? In fact, the more I'm talking about it, maybe I'll do that during the commercial break, Show. I'm looking. Maybe I will.
You do that a lot. Yeah. You like talk yourself into these moves, and then by the time we're done the show, it's changed. It's happened more often than I can count it this time.
It's happened. You talk through the situation, right? This. Oh, and as I say, folks, listen, for fantasy baseball, everybody's excited. It's the beginning of the season. Believe me, I say it every year. I guarantee you, unless you are the worst fantasy baseball player ever, you will make the playoffs if you just pay attention and set your lineup every day. If you commit every day to 10 minutes with your coffee and you set your lineup, if you're in a normal league that's not filled with, you know, super insiders, whatever, you will make the playoffs by just paying attention. Because every year you see guys like, oh, I went on vacation, I forgot. It's like by June, people will start forgetting. And all you have to do is pay attention, and you will make the playoffs. That's it.
It's true.
I'm telling you. It's right there. It's very, very simple. Okay, let's take the break. We'll come back on the other side, maybe a little more Blue Jays talk. But then our fantasy wrestling league, our listener league, who's going to be the GM, up to date, who's going to win the pizza prize show going in from last week, our AEW All Elite Wrestling Fantasy League. We're also going to talk some WrestleMania. We missed WrestleMania last week. So get your let's put this out there as well. On the text line, 590-590, and on Twitter, at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. Number one, if you want to be the listener GM for this week, hit us up there. But two, who's this upcoming week or over the next couple weeks? Who's a wrestler that you think is going to really pop in fantasy? And by that, I mean pretty much appear a lot, get a push, get some wins. I'd be interested to see in WWE or AEW, I'd be interested to see who that might be for people. So hit us up with that. We'll talk some wrestling, some more baseball on the other side when the Fantasy Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to the Fantasy Show. Andy McNamara, Shaw Ali, you're listening across Sportsnet Radio Network. Give us a follow on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. You can also text in 590-590 and let us know, hey, you know what? You want to be a part of our listener league, our wrestling listener league? You can do that. You can be the weekly GM, have a chance to win some pizza prizes. And we have this week's one show. Listener GM was Joe Caparelli, who did a nice job for the Outsiders. That's our team for the fan. And he actually did a nice job, was gained the third most points this week. However, show that was still not enough to get more weekly points than first place, the House of Bebe himself, Mr. Josh Santos. Still got it.
Apparently, yeah.
So it'll never be enough.
Santos wants all the pizza. He wants to destroy. He doesn't want the listener to get anything. Show just wants to take it all. But show you are not in last place. You are in second last place, ahead of Nick Alberga, who should be ashamed of himself. The Golden Muzzy himself, our guy at the Golden Muzzy on Twitter. We love Nick, but last place. You are in second last place.
I am in second last place. I made a couple of moves last night as I was prepping for today's episode, today's version of the Fantasy Show. Santos gave me a good tidbit, which is honestly just check the AEW Twitter, and you will probably find the people who are going to compete on any given week. So if you go to like twitter.com/AEW, which is their official account, you can see like a week or so in advance, or like, you know, 5 days or so in advance, they'll post. They'll kind of tease it, but I think like once you get close enough to the event, they'll post like what the matchups are. So I just spent like in the last day or so, I was like, I wonder who's playing on. They're playing, I think the next time they have an event is on the 13th, Wednesday. Which I guess is Wednesday.
Yeah.
And so I picked up Powerhouse Hobbs because he's wearing fantastic fire pants and has a great facial expression in this picture. Great, great picture.
Excellent.
And then I also picked up Luchasaurus because I think you dropped him, actually. So I picked up Luchasaurus. Apparently it's the AEW World Tag Team Championship on Wednesday. Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus versus Red Dragon. So there you go.
That's there you go. Smart, because we use, folks, if you haven't checked it out, drop the belt, FantasyShow.com. They don't sponsor the show or anything. I just
they should love the site.
It's phenomenal. One, I don't know of any other fantasy wrestling site. Two, the detailed points that they lay out, it's so cool. Actually, show, they're based out of Las Vegas, and when I'm in Vegas, which I wish you could come to, but when I'm in Vegas for the NFL draft, for our UFFsports.com NFL draft party package, I'm going to meet up with them. They're going to come out to hang out with the draft with some of our NFL players that we're hanging out with, and they're going to they're going to check it out. So maybe we'll be able to lock them in for a bit of a sponsorship. I'll do some work out there.
Please do, yeah. Hey, so since you're going to be down there for the NFL draft, does that mean we have, like, are you going to be waking up for the fantasy show on the Sunday at, like, 6 a.m., like, Vegas time?
Oh, gosh. Well, so my flight out, so I fly in on the Wednesday. The draft, of course, is on the Thursday. And then I fly out on Saturday, 6 a.m. Vegas time. Just the worst. But I'm going to be, I'll come home, and then I'll just, you know, I'll have a day, I'll just be up. I'll get up. I got two young kids. I'm up regardless. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're tired.
That's true.
Tired.
You're not up. Given a choice. You don't have a choice,
no,
Andy.
It's happening. So you just get the extra pot of coffee and you go. But folks, actually, by the way, if you want, there are very limited amount of ticket packages remaining. If you want to join us for the NFL draft at UFFsports.com, Show and I are a part of it. In Vegas, at the Circus, Stadium Swim, Legacy Club, VIP parties. It's going to be amazing. Just go to UFFsports.com. You'll see right on the front page. You can check out the details. You've got drink, food packages, all that good stuff. You can sign up there. And you can also learn about our brand new college fantasy football professional fantasy league. Up to 24 teams are going to be auctioned off during that same week. So check that out, both at UFFsports.com, right on the title page. So it's going to be lots of fun in Vegas. But yes, show, I will be back for the fantasy show on that day, and we'll be able to have a lot of fun at the draft. So I'll get some scouting in there, maybe get some audio we can play for the on the show that Sunday.
I like it. I like it. I think I know I was a little afraid you were gonna say, oh, show, we're gonna have to take the week off, or we're gonna have to do some, I don't know, whatever it was.
But no,
you know,
weeks what? I'm excited
because then we can actually recap the NFL draft on and see what the top fantasy football landing spots are specifically for that, because I mean, this is the fantasy show, so all that kind of stuff does concern us a little bit, right? It's fun. I feel like by the time we get to, let's say, end of April, May, we will be into the NHL playoffs. The NBA playoffs will still be going on. Baseball will be in full swing, and you're hoping that, you know, the starters have figured it out by then. We have the NFL draft for our purposes as well. It's a lot of stuff going on. Like, it's one of the best times of the year, I feel like.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be a big party in Vegas. I can't wait. It's gonna be a lot of fun. So, yeah, it's gonna be a good time. I'll do one more quick mention, show, for our NFL Legends League. You can watch today on Twitch, twitch.tv/UltimateFantasySports, 11 a.m. Eastern, all the way through to 9 p.m. tonight, where you see the video game version of What Ifs. These head-to-head matchups, which is a ton of fun to watch if you want to see all different eras of what-if dream matchups for NFL legends. So on twitch.tv/UltimateFantasySports, you can check that out all day today and then tomorrow night. But let's get back to the wrestling a little bit here and bring in Santos again, our reigning champ. Now, with our fantasy league here on Drop the Belt, the point side, like if you talk in a segment, you get points, if you use a weapon, but it's mainly if you win. And so that's the tricky part. You can have a great match, but if your guy loses, he's either getting no points or very few points. And so what I did this week is, actually just now during the break, I was talking to Santos, and he mentioned, he's like, oh yeah, Samoa Joe's in action. And while he was talking, show, I added him to my fantasy team. I dropped Nyla Rose, and I added him to the Elite World Order. So I did a little
He did what Andy does best.
Yeah. I snagged him. Boom. Poached. Snagged. Right off the market. What are you expecting, Santos? Because Samoa Joe, who a lot of our listeners know from WWE, from Ring of Honor days, is back in sort of a, because AEW bought Ring of Honor, so he's kind of back in a, I'm not quite sure what type of role in which company, but kind of both right now. What are you expecting out of Samoa Joe?
Well, he got the All Elite graphic on Twitter that usually means that he's on the AEW roster. As for what I'm expecting from him this week, I don't know if he's going to win. Suzuki just won the ROH World TV Championship, which is what the match is for. He's facing Suzuki. And I'm expecting Suzuki to retain, but anything can happen. Joe is a ROH alumni, so that, I mean, that match can go either way. Either way, it's going to be in a really exciting match.
So I may have made a mistake. Damn it.
No, I mean, I think regardless, he's going to be getting a push. So I don't think it's a mistake. I think it's a good pickup overall. I just don't know how it's going to play out this week. And you can't. It's not like you can pick up Suzuki because he's not technically an AEW wrestler. So,
oh really?
No, he's a New Japan wrestler, and he's not on the AEW roster. He's just kind of a part of the Forbidden Door, as it were.
It's all crossover stuff, which is a lot different from, let's say, WWE guys, where it's like if you're in WWE, that is where you are. You've never been anywhere else. And don't you dare mention that you've been anywhere else. In AEW, it's like, yeah, this guy's from Japan, and he's in this company, and this guy, and they'll bring all these different guys in. So it's a very unique type of crossover type of situations where you can have all these different type of matchups. So Samoa Joe's there. There's also Chris Jericho, who everybody knows and loves. And Santos, I want to ask you this. With Jericho, the Jericho Appreciation Society, his new group, they got sort of beat up backstage, jumped from behind from Eddie Kingston and Santana and Ortiz. If we're looking fantasy-wise, and there's a trios match this week with Jericho, Daniel Garcia, who I love as an up-and-comer, and Jake Hagar, what are your fantasy expectations for Chris Jericho? Because now he's moved into the bad guy, the heel type of role.
I think just based on what you just said, I think he's going to win. I think that...
Oh, good.
I think this feud is just kind of kicking up, and usually the heels don't really lose until it's over. I honestly think this week they're still a relatively new group, and I think that they're gonna get the win this week based on that reason alone.
I think
how do you know
good.
This like are you reading some kind of AEW years, script? I need to know how do we know
years
we
of
know
watching
this?
Wrestling is how I it just
you just get a feeling
you
Joe.
Get a feeling of how you know, stories are booked, how certain wrestlers are booked. And, you know, with a group like, you know, Jericho's in AEW to get people over, to get younger wrestlers over. And Daniel Garcia is one of those wrestlers. And I mean, it is a trios match. So those are usually the matches that younger talent can afford to lose because it's not a one-on-one. But I just don't see that group losing just yet, even if it's just, a random match on a Wednesday.
I see here in our league the Fuzzy Muzzies, i.e. Nick Alberga's team, he has both Daniel Garcia and MJF, and MJF is apparently also has some matchup going on, I guess, on Wednesday. He's as far as this graphic goes, I assume he's fighting or something on Wednesday
yes.
night.
Captain Sean Dean, I believe.
Yes, yeah, MJF versus Sean Dean. So what, are we thinking that maybe Alberga is looking up a little bit here with these two guys?
Ooh, I think so. I think
I think MJF loses with interference from Wardlow.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. That's what I'll...
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
But Daniel Garcia would get him points, and Hook, who is actually, if everyone remembers Taz, who's on commentary for AEW, but you know, WWE, ECW forever, Hook is his son, and they've been giving him, he's been getting... A big sort of quiet push. His whole gimmick is he's just like doesn't talk, quiet, comes in, then just like suplexes the hell out of people for 5 minutes and then goes. So I think his push is just sort of starting too.
Yeah. I'm not sure if he's got a match this week.
But he always pops up somewhere.
Yeah. So like,
Adam
get
Page
a little
does.
Bit of, a little bit of points. So. Oh, yes.
Actually, show to your point, and you look at Hangman Adam Page, who's the AEW World Champ, this could actually be a big week for the Fuzzy Muzzies to make a giant climb up the standings, because it's you get points in our fantasy league for title matches, for main events, and on Rampage it's going to be Hangman Adam Page versus Adam Cole, so you get those points. I wonder,
and there's,
you know,
a gimmick, there's a gimmick tied to that match too.
Oh, it's Texas Death Match. Yep. You get a gimmick points. Yeah, well, that's so okay. Hangman is by Fuzzy Muzzies. Josh, you have Adam Cole. How do you think that one's going to play? If Adam Cole wins the title, you're running away with the league.
This could be either a really good week for Nick, or a really amazing week for me. we'll see what happens by the time we get to next Sunday.
Just jumping in. Show, do you have any as far as WrestleMania? We haven't really talked about that yet from the other week. Did you catch any of Mania? The
main, you know how it's like it's 2 days, right?
It's
so
too long
they
kind of
they split it up. I don't love that it's on 2 days, I admit. So I freely admit I did not really watch the Sunday, because Sundays are, I mean, you know, you and I have this show. I'm usually busy with doing a million other things on Sundays for Sportsnet anyways. So I didn't watch the Sunday show, but I did watch the Saturday one, and Stone Cold making an appearance. I got to say that tugged on the old nostalgia strings a little bit, Andy.
That's why they did it. And you know, great shape for Stone Cold.
He was.
Right? Like, Dude was cut, looked good. First match in, how long was it? It was over 10 years.
Yeah, it was a long time. It was a long time. Like, and then he did the beer thing when he's like standing on the edge of the ring, and he smashes the cans together and basically just takes a beer shower, barely drinks any of it. But I mean, that's been his thing for years, right?
It was all his, it was that feel good. You know, you had the gimmicks of Johnny Knoxville, Logan Paul, or whatever, right? Like that. Yeah, you had a whole bunch of gimmicky stuff. The 2 days is too long. It takes away the specialness of it. WrestleMania is one day. It's the Super Bowl of wrestling. It's supposed to be one day. The main event, though, the Lesnar versus Roman Reigns, that one really delivered. That was great.
That was the Sunday game, the Sunday event.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't, I freely admit I did not watch.
Sandoz, what did you think overall? Like, I liked those specialty matches, the celeb stuff. It's always the celebrity portion has always been a part of WrestleMania. It's fun, but I just sort of felt overall there wasn't a lot of, let's say, just like, okay, we're building up. It's just like, hey, here's some flashy stuff. Watch WrestleMania. And it was fun, but like, I didn't feel there was necessarily a lot of building to take away from it. Like, as far as outside of it just being a 2 day spectacle.
I mean, that's what WrestleMania is, right? A spectacle. It's supposed to be the biggest show. It's supposed to be good for both hardcore wrestling fans and casual wrestling fans, because it's supposed to have that mainstream attention. It's worth noting that you're talking about celebrities. Apparently, I didn't see any of it live. Logan Paul was on the card and apparently did really well as far as celebrity wrestlers go. And show, he even came out with one of the most expensive Pokemon cards you could ever buy around his neck as a part of his entrance. WrestleMania is what it is. We're never going to go back to that one day thing, I don't think. There's money to be made with the 2 day spectacle. The interesting thing about Stone Cold was that he came out in the second day as well and gave Vince McMahon a stunner just to kind of bring back old times. And it was probably the worst sell to a stunner we've ever seen, but which is kind of,
that's what Vince does.
Yeah, that's kind of nostalgia in itself. And just one other thing to mention about the first day was the debut and the return of former AEW founder Cody Rhodes to WWE. Yeah. So if you like wrestling, and you're familiar with what WrestleMania is, you're not. I mean, it was a great weekend, but
it's a fun night.
Yeah, it was fun. And you know, people also looked forward to the Raw after WrestleMania and everything. And it was just a really good, like, the whole week, like with all the different promotions with AEW, ROH, WWE. It was a really good week for wrestling fans last week.
Yeah, it really was. So, show for you having that connection to more the, from a few years ago, the Stone Cold era. Did that, because the whole point was like, oh yeah, you know, if you're not too familiar with the new stuff, to draw you back in, so that got your interest, right? And you know, names like Edge and Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns and all that.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, Roman Reigns is one of the more popular wrestlers, right, of the last several years. But I mean, if you're asking me, is it going to draw me back into watching WWE? The answer is no.
Right?
First of all, there's just way too much stuff going on right now. Period. Beyond wrestling, I mean, you like even right now, like, I mean, what? If anyone is watching anything beyond the NHL, the end of the NHL season, the NBA playoffs, the NFL draft, and certainly the beginning of Major League Baseball, I mean, I don't know how you squeeze in time for literally anything else at this point, right? So
what you're saying is Austin Matthews needs to sign with WWE.
Oh. Hey, I mean, I'd take that. Score, get to 60 goals, Austin, and then win the Leafs a cup, and then you can just go do whatever you want. I'll follow you anywhere.
I don't know if any hockey player has any sort of personality to be on pro wrestling. I think that would be the worst
Brad
promos
Marchand
in the world.
Brad Marchand, yeah. Probably.
Marchand
and maybe
would be
Michael Bunting.
Oh.
Michael Bunting.
Yeah, you know, like especially Marchand, though, like that guy's just got a heel fade. You just want to smash him.
Marchand and Tom Wilson. I'd watch them in wrestling.
Those would be, you know what, we should do that in future week. Which, like, pro athletes from different sports would be good in pro wrestling? Because, like, we may have just named the only two in hockey. Because otherwise it's like, if you're cutting a hockey promo, it's like, oh, I just want to put on the best match. Like, wake up!
I'd also watch Wayne Simmons at a wrestling match. Yes. I would.
Wayne Simmons 1,000,000% would be good. Yeah, PK Subban would be amazing, I think, on the mic as well.
Agreed.
Cutting a promo, be awesome. All right. So, folks, you want to be in, hit us up for our wrestling fantasy GM for this week. Win yourself some Domino's Pizza Prize. You can get us on the text line, 590-590, or on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, or at The Fantasy Show. That will do it, folks. Next week, more fantasy baseball, more NFL draft, fantasy football previews as we get you set for the upcoming NFL draft, baseball season as it goes on, and a whole lot more. For Josh, for show, I'm Andy. You've been listening to The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.